You know, I think we need to be okay with saying your relationship with Jesus during this time is going to look different and feel different than other times, and that is okay. You know, if you're big into playing sports and you break your leg, you're not going to be able to play basketball like you did before you broke your leg, right? It's going to look different. It needs time to heal. And so how you usually sustain a relationship with Jesus, through prayer, through Bible study, through community, through all these things. And those are important. But when you're grieving, to give yourself the permission, I just don't feel like doing that right now. And that's okay.
Hi, I'm Xander, and this is Days Before You podcast. The topic we have for you today is a heavy but important one, and something many of us unfortunately have faced at some point in our lives, grief. But if you experience deep loss yourself or walked with somebody who has, grief does not follow a script. It's messy, it's unpredictable, and sometimes it feels like it will never end. As Christians, we're told to trust God, to have hope. But what do you do when your heart is shattered and God feels far away? What happens when you're angry at Him or just feel completely abandoned? Today we're talking honestly about what grief looks like and what that could mean to you as a Christian. We'll unpack some of the common misconceptions people have, talk about how to stay connected to Jesus in the middle of all that pain, and explore how to begin finding hope again, even when your world feels like it's falling to pieces. Today we have Jeremy and Brooke Wong. They are pastors at the Madison Campus Church, and this duo has walked through one of the toughest grief experiences somebody could ever go through, the loss of a child. While their journey with grief has come with immense pain, they've become powerful advocates for opening up this conversation and sharing the hope they've discovered in the midst of all of that loss. In fact, they shared their daughter's own story on their own podcast, Hope Beyond Heartbreak, using their experience to inspire and support others walking through similar pain. Jeremy and Brooke, thank you guys for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So I wanted to begin really quickly. If you guys could like summarize, you know, your story, what brought you to Madison and what happened through your period of grief.
Sure. I'll talk a little bit about our daughter and you can talk about maybe how we came to mm-hmm. be here at Madison. But Jeremy and I have two children. JJ was born in 2016. So in the year 2023, she was 7 years old. And we had lived for quite some time in Ohio. That is where she was born and raised. And our son was also born in Ohio. He was born in a different part of Ohio. But for all intents and purposes, that's what our kids have always come to know and call as home, is Ohio, because that's where we really spent the majority of their lives and a good portion of our career to this point as well. So we had actually just received a call to go to Tennessee, and we were only there for just a little bit over a year when all of a sudden, it was the month of December, and our daughter got a fever. And there is nothing particularly special about a fever. Tons of kids were getting sick, so many kids, in fact, that they had closed schools. And school systems had closed to just kind of mitigate that. And so we didn't think much of it. But after a few days of that fever just not letting up, even though it was just a minor fever, we ultimately ended up taking our daughter to the doctor, where we learned that she had T-cell ALL, which for all intents and purposes is a very aggressive form of blood cancer, really. And we, of course, had no reason to know anything about that. We didn't have a family history of that. We certainly had not experienced cancer each other, and not really an immediate family as well. So it really caught us by surprise, especially because that was the only symptom. Some surprising aspects of our story, just in short, and I'm sure feel free to ask some follow-up questions, but the surprising thing about our story is that from diagnosis to the day of death, our daughter only lived for 17 days. And so it was a perfect storm of a trauma. There were a lot of elements in which we could relate to people who have lost their child due to an accident, because lots of accidents do happen in childhood and the child dies. And so we could relate in some ways to that, because 17 days is not even 3 weeks. Yet we also found that we could relate to those who have battled cancer. Some of the families that we had met, their children had battled cancer for half of their young lives or more. And so we could relate a little bit to them as well, in addition to the trauma of the diagnosis and the hospital stay, and then ultimately the death just so, so quick there. It really took us by surprise. So December 29, 2023 is when our little girl died. And it's interesting that as time has passed, you might be tempted to think that that date is the date that will always carry. And to some degree, we will, because that is the date that really took us by surprise. There was a lot of shock and just raw grief on that day. But really, for me, and I think, Jeremy, you would say this for you too, December 12, that day of diagnosis, that is the day that we will never forget. That is the day that we... or at least I remember feeling like you can follow all of the rules and life will not care. Good people, good things happen to good people, but bad things happen to good people too, even when you follow the rules. And so honestly, that date of December 12 is almost more upsetting and more troublesome to me, if you will, than December 29. And I was really surprised to find that. So up until that time, we were in Tennessee, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and when our little girl died, for many reasons, we were just left with so many questions, and also the thought of, what are we going to do? I've spent my whole career in working with children, and I had just started working at the hospital, and so when my own child died in a hospital, I just thought, how is this possible that I can do this again? Jeremy spent his whole career working with youth and children as well. And so what followed was really an opportunity for us to review and reflect on all the things that meant the most to us, and really kind of a defining moment for us there.
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit how we got to Madison, because obviously we're not in Chattanooga, now we're in Nashville. And so it was just, I think a couple weeks after the funeral, you know, Brooke was wondering what to do next, the kind of the next chapter and things like that. And she reached out to one of her mentors, Greg Taylor, who was actually her Bible teacher in high school. And she said, "Hey, Greg, you know, just want to talk. Not quite sure what to do."
Well, I wouldn't call him Greg. I would always call him Mr. Taylor, because that's who he
Taylor.
Was.
Mr. Yeah. Taylor.
So,
yeah.
You know, in the spirit of honesty,
yeah. Okay,
Mr. I just can't.
All right.
Pastor Greg now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I have only met him when we were in ministry, so I can call him Greg.
Yeah, yeah, you can.
Okay.
But
I only know him as Greg, too.
So. Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Life before him. Okay.
Yes, yes. So reach out, and he hesitantly said, "Hey, did you hear that there are two positions in Madison, a children and a youth pastor? I know it's not a great time to move, but yeah." So unbeknownst to us, I did not know this, that there were conversations happening before this where he was actually told, you know, Brooke and Jeremy would be great at Madison, but do not talk to them because it's just not the right time, right? Don't reach out to them. And so we did not know this. So that's why he was a little hesitant. But, you know, Brooke latched onto it, and I clearly remember the conversation. She came to me and she said, "Jeremy, do you know that there's two positions in Madison?" And honestly, my first reaction was not the best husband reaction, but I said, I don't want to move. We're staying right here. Because I felt comfortable in where we were, and just that I felt that things were outside, obviously, of, you know, the death of my daughter. As far as the church was going, everything seemed to be going well. But later on, the Holy Spirit tapped me on the shoulder and he said, you may want to reconsider that. So I said, okay, well, you know, we will put our name in. You know, honestly, I thought big church, probably a lot of names. I didn't think, honestly, Xander, I didn't think we were going to leave. Mm-hmm. I said, there's probably a lot of people that are on the list. And so, yeah, sure, what harm does it do to put our name in the hat? Well, literally the next day, after we turned in our resumes, Joel Sutherland gave us a call. And he said, hey, just want to have an informal interview with you guys. And so within the next week, we had the interview. We talked with him for about 45 minutes. And at the end of that 45 minutes, he said, you guys are like two pieces of a puzzle that we've been looking for. Let's take this to the next level. And so within 3 weeks or so, we were up here in Madison interviewing, and just one thing led to another. There were several signs leading up to it. And even when we're here that weekend, you know, some things that we said, Lord, you know, if this is where you're wanting us to go, you know, we want to see these things. And the Lord showed us and was gently leading us. And so after that weekend, after much prayer and thought, when Elder Haley called and Pastor Nathan, we said, yeah, you know, I think this is where the Lord is leading. So we'd be glad to take it. So that's how we moved to Madison. It was honestly a really quick journey, really quick turnaround. But the Lord made it abundantly clear on all fronts that this was where we needed to be at this time in our journey. And so, yeah.
And actually, Jeremy had some moments of doubt there. He was not quite as ready to move. But when Mr. Taylor, Pastor Greg, said that there were two positions and they were so highly specialized, a children's pastor and a youth pastor, I was like, this is ridiculous. We are perfect for this. And it's almost laughable to think that two positions like that would come open, not just in the same conference, but at the same church at the same time. And so that gave me a lot of confidence moving forward, too. Yeah.
It took me a little bit longer.
Yeah. You came around.
The Lord had to, I came around. Yeah. The Lord had to work on me a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Well, that's an interesting story. Like, it's clearly summarized, but that's a lot to unpack in just a few sentences. So I want to go back a little bit to the point where it's like after the death and you are experiencing all of this emotions, all of this flux, and you're getting people, like, you know, you're getting approached to come and work. What was your first, like, well, before we get into the job, after all everything that went down, how was everything that you were going through, all you were feeling? Can you walk us through what you were feeling just in the blankest sense of it?
Sure. Yeah, I think that the best way to describe December 12 and finding out that your child has cancer, two words just come to mind. One is terror and the other is anguish. I had never before experienced chest pain, but I started to just experience really painful chest pain. And still will feel that way sometimes because it feels like my heart is breaking. So those were kind of some of the emotions that we experienced. And it was such an emotional journey that each day, every hour, things could change. Things would be looking good. Things would be looking bad. These things were all out of our control. And it's interesting that when your life does start to spin out of control, you start to try and control everything that you can. Mm. And that, of course, is like grasping at straws, because reality says that we cannot control everything. So terror and anguish, that was how it definitely kicked off for me. We settled into a routine several days in. We started to learn what to expect. We encountered some early issues with cancer, like a lot of vomiting and so on and so forth, and we were able to get that under control. And then just when we would get one side effect of that cancer treatment under control, then there would be another side effect, and it was always something. And that was one thing that broke my heart too, as JJ would say, "Mommy, it seems like one thing will get better and something else will get worse." So just following the horror of cancer and trying to accept those wins of like, yes, now we know what to do on day two of such and such a medication. We know that it'll be better. But then having to do a different medication and then being right back to the start and a new symptom, and now we have to start all over. It's just really, really exhausting. It also felt one thing that brought a lot of hope and a lot of comfort is the support of individuals that we had. Nobody could come into our room because folks with cancer are very immunocompromised. So we had very few visitors, and that's a better environment for healing anyway. But people would text and call and message and send gift after gift after gift. Mm-hmm. And those things really meant a lot. And while it is true that you can't buy love, you certainly can send your love, and that sometimes arrives in a text message, sometimes in a call, and sometimes in a batch of cookies. And so we really appreciated that time. Fast forwarding then to the day of death, there has never been a time in my life that I was as shocked as I was on the day that our daughter died, because there was no indication that she was even doing poorly. Kids have this superpower where they can do really, really well, but they also can go down really, really fast. But then they can rebound really, really fast too. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, but there was no indication that our daughter was going to die. And so I just remember after our daughter died, Jeremy and I went and we just sat in the bed of the hotel room that we had at the Ronald McDonald House. And just one thought just kept going through our minds. What just happened? What just happened? And I imagine that that's probably how the disciples felt when Jesus died. Now, in my defense, nobody told me my daughter was going to die. Jesus did try and tell his disciples that, but still their humanity just could not receive that. And it was just a all the things like, I didn't even know that could happen. I didn't think it could happen. I'd never even thought about that happening before. And so that was the devastation. So in short, roller coaster, a lot of emotions felt more intensely than ever before. That was my experience.
Yeah, for me, a lot of the care that JJ received and support was from Brooke, because we had to split our time. So I really took care of our youngest, or our son, Sammy. And so Brooke spent the majority of the time in the hospital, and so her reactions and feelings are from experiencing that. Obviously, as the father, you know, the shock, the anguish, all that is, yeah, makes sense. But a lot of the suffering, so to speak, I kind of was not there for, because I was with Sammy, at least the bulk majority. When she died, though, there was, yeah, I would agree, a sense of shock and numbness. You know, what exactly happened? It took a while to wrap my mind around what happened. But when that had kind of sunk in, definitely days of, it's hard to explain, but, you know, you feel like you're drowning. You feel like there's this heavy weight on you, and you can't get up to take a breath and you feel like it's just over and over and over, and just this dark cloud that comes over you. That's how I felt. Thankfully, you know, the conference that I was a part of at the time gave me a lot of space to kind of, you know, take bereavement and things like that. So that definitely helped, because I think it would have been a lot worse if I had to work as well during that time, at least that few couple months. Yeah, definitely the feeling of darkness, feeling of, you know, can't breathe, the feeling of, you know, you're drowning and just, you know, gasping for air. And, you know, I would find myself, you know, thinking, you know, kind of, how do I explain this? You know, like when you watch a movie and it's a sad movie, you're mostly wrapped up in that movie, but then you're like, oh, well, that wasn't me. So I would have that feeling, and then it would sink in. Oh, wait, it is me. And there's no getting rid of that. You know, that situation that happened did happen. Definitely those first few months that feeling really intensified. And that was kind of how it was like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So clearly just talking about it brings up a lot of memories.
Yeah.
And a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, like, you know, over time and like over, like since it happened, even up till now, how do you guys, either as individually or as like a couple or as like Christians in general, prevent yourself from like drowning, prevent yourself from sinking completely, mm-hmm. and, you know, staying afloat after the devastation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, honestly, I think sometimes, you know, I don't think we do this on purpose, but sometimes we feel like there needs to be a timeline on this, and oh, you should be past this right now. Oh, why is this still affecting you? And so part of it is just giving myself the space when grief does show up, and it always shows up in inopportune times. You know, it shows up before I'm ready to preach. It shows up, you know, before I have to do something. It always shows up. But giving myself the space to say, okay, to feel the feelings, to grieve. And through this process, we learned that there are two types of grievers, generally speaking. There's an analytical griever and an emotional griever. Xander, you can probably tell which griever I am. And so because I'm an emotional griever, when that comes, to allow myself to cry, to allow myself to get it out, helps. And also, I know that some people sometimes think differently about this, but counseling has played a huge role. And there were times where I needed the assistance of medication just to get to that next step. And so as for me personally, as a Christian, giving myself space to grieve and to allow myself to grieve when it comes. You know, obviously, you know, scripture and prayer is involved in all that. But also reaching out for help when I need help. And when needed, having the assistance of medication. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's several, really hurtful things that Christians have unintentionally done after a death or after a tragedy, something like this. Probably one of the biggest ones is, you know, chin up. You'll see her again. You'll see her again. You'll see your daughter and hold JJ again. And while those things may be true, they are not helpful, because this idea of just glossing over and always positive Pam, it's not realistic. And that is evidence that real grief has not been experienced. So while those statements may be well-intended, they actually cause a lot more harm than they are helpful. Yes, it is true. We believe we will see and hold JJ again, and we're very much looking forward till that day. But that day, unfortunately, is not today. And so because it's not today, today still sucks. And we're going to let it suck because we still live here on planet Earth. We'll do the best that we can. Like Jeremy mentioned, several of our tools that we have used and the skills that we have learned have helped us make it through this grief. And the tools may as well, if you're experiencing grief, or even better to practice it before you experience grief so you already have it in your tool bag, but better to expose yourself to all of these things so that you know what really works for you. Everybody responds to medication differently. And so, but there's a lot of things that are out there. One thing that has been hurtful is the idea that Adventists shouldn't need or take any medication because we have the health message. And that is not true. Medicines can be used to help support us in our lifestyles. There's also several core concepts of the fact that any type of supportive medication will just knock you out flat and you'll just become a zombie. And that is not true. That is simply not true. And so that information would be harmful. Now, the flip side of that, there are several helpful things that you can do to help your body heal itself, such as taking hot and cold showers, such as feeding yourself good food as much as you can. You don't feel like eating anything, then you feel like eating everything. You just have to do your best and, you know, with what you can, try and drink as much water as you can. Sometimes you just can't stomach it, but you know, there are a lot of tools that you can have. But another tool that I wanted to mention that Jeremy is not as big on is group therapy. I love it. I eat it up. I love to hear the stories of other people. And I find that one of the biggest parts of my job, but also just who I really am, is to be a storyteller. And of course, Jesus' story is my favorite story. But JJ's story is now one of the most important stories that I can tell. And we'll definitely share her little story here with you in a minute. But to sit in group therapy and just to hear other people's stories, you just realize, oh my goodness, I had that thought too. And I just felt so bizarre about it. But you're thinking the same thought as I am. You're feeling the same way as I am. I found that to be very, very helpful. More helpful even than individual counseling sometimes. Jeremy also is a big journaler.
Yeah. So
he loves that.
I journal. That's my therapy. Yeah.
His group is his pen, his
my
book.
My group is my pen
and himself.
And my paper. And that was something I learned from our grief coaches early on. And at least for me, that worked very well. Mm-hmm. Was journaling. And so part of taking that next step, part of providing space where I can breathe again and have enough space to at least take that next step, is journaling. And it sounds weird. It really does. But it is so, it's such a simple thing, but it's so powerful, at least for me, to be able to just write my thoughts out. And there's no structure to it. It's just, I just basically throw up on my paper what I'm feeling, what I'm processing, how I feel, everything, just write it down on paper. And just that act of doing it, you know, and, you know, writing out, you know, how I'm feeling and praying about it as well. You know, I'm praying, you know, my prayers are, I'm writing out my prayers, you know, it's conversation with God. You know, it's kind of mixed up and kind of all of a mess, jumbled it. But after I've gotten it out on paper, I feel the weight has lifted a little, at least enough to be able to take that next step, at least enough to ride the grief wave where it's not as overwhelming or not as, you know, suffocating. That has been helpful to me. Yeah. So, yes, my group is my pen and my paper.
Nice. That's good. Yes. You have something.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You're both, it's interesting, you're both using like therapy or therapeutic tools, but in different ways. So to see that work effectively for each of you is really incredible. I wanted to ask, though, because you slightly talked about this a minute ago, but I wanted to ask more in detail. When people approach you and want to, like, help in some sort of way, what would you say to people so they're not insensitive or whatever actions, or they just people who have never experienced something like this? How, what would you recommend for them to do or say or how to act around you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really tricky because people tend to get very nervous.
And rightfully so.
And rightfully so. And I'm glad they're nervous because that probably means they have not experienced this. And I hope that no one would ever have to experience this too. But when people get nervous, then they say silly things. We all do that, and we're all guilty of that. And so sometimes some of the most meaningful things that have ever happened, there's one very, very tenderhearted man at Madison. And after we gave our testimony, we were in the back in the receiving line, and that guy just walked up and just gave me a hug and did not say anything. And that hug said everything that I needed to hear at that moment. Like, that really meant a lot. Sometimes people will say, would it be okay if I gave you a hug? And that's something that bereaved parents really cling to. And if you, it's one thing to receive a hug as a bereaved parent, but boy, if you ever see two bereaved parents hugging each other, you just know there is some healing happening in there, because it's like once your child has died, you need to be held and held tight and close because your heart has just fallen apart. So anyways, that was a very long answer, Xander, to the question of what should people say. Less is best, you know. Sometimes people have put a lot of thought into a special Bible verse that they'd like to share, and that's very meaningful because the Bible is meaningful to us, of course. When you say, I'm sorry for your loss, I'm praying for you, those are kind of some of the default. If in doubt, you can almost always say this.
Yeah, yeah. You know, for me personally, I'll say a couple of things. For me personally, especially when we came to Madison, people were a little nervous about asking about JJ. Because they didn't want to trigger any grief or whatnot. But for me, though I'm an emotional griever, and though if you ask and I share, there is a good likelihood that there will be tears. For me, though, if I don't share it or don't talk about her, I feel like she's forgotten. And so a good question could be, you know, do you mind sharing? Or do you feel comfortable talking about her at this time? Or do you feel comfortable sharing your story with me? You know, that gives them the opportunity to, yes, I am comfortable, or no, I really am not at the space in the space right now. So just something like that. And also, I did not come up with this. Actually, one of our professors at Southern came up with this. He calls it the three E's when we talk about grief. You know, a lot of people tend to exhort, explain, or empathize. Those are the three things. And so many times in the Christian context, we want to try to explain things, you know, why God did this, or try to explain biblically, you know, what happened. Or we try to exhort, you know, we say, you know, I want to be ready when Jesus comes so I can see her again, or, you know, try to do the whole exhorting thing. And what he said, which I totally agree with and I've experienced, when you exhort and explain, it minimizes empathy. In order to respond well to someone who's going through grief, you need to empathize, which means exhortation and explanation decreases. And so to be able to empathize with these questions of, I'm so sorry for your loss, or I'm praying for you, or provide space to empathize and really be with them, or just have the ministry of presence. Mm-hmm. You know, so many times we feel like that's ineffective, but honestly, I cannot tell you to this day, we're about a year and four months out, I cannot tell you everything people said, but I can tell you every single person who sat and cried with us.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah. Like that hug, for example, there were no words that came with it, but I will always treasure that, for sure.
Yeah. So don't discount or don't discredit the ministry of presence, just being there, a hand on the shoulder, crying with them. Don't discredit those, you know, I'm praying for you, I'm so sorry for your loss. Do you feel comfortable talking about the person? And not always, you know, going towards trying to explain or trying to exhort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting too, because our medical team, they were not excited, but our medical team was eager to share with us. There's a final meeting when there's been a death like this where you have the opportunity to come and you kind of review the case, you know, because this is a trauma and your brain is not functioning fully. And, you know, so that's how these wild stories, you know, come out of parents. Oh, they never get well, they might have, okay, but your brain is, you know, not functioning fully. And that's what it's supposed to do, because your brain is trying to protect your body and the rest of itself, because this is too much to handle. You weren't made to handle this. Mm-hmm. So we were there at the meeting and they were sharing with us, and they just to be able to use the terms and the talk and the levels and the numbers and so on and so forth, and to have that explanation, it made them, our medical team, feel good. It had an effect on them. And that is exactly what you're looking for in your medical team. You want them to know what happened. You want them to be able to take appropriate answers, or to take appropriate measures and have the answers. But as the parents, it's like, that does nothing for me. That does nothing. But I'm glad that you found that answer. You know, I'm glad that we know the answer. You know, but ultimately, that does nothing for me, because at the end of the day, my child is still gone and my heart is still broken. So that, to Jeremy's point of trying to explain or, you know,
rationalize things.
You know, yeah, rationalize things. Oh, well, cancer happens to one out of, you know.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter to me, because right now this is my child. Mm-hmm. So I would say also just honoring the person's experience and really helping with practical things. That entire year, it's like a black hole. The year after JJ's death is like a black hole in our memory. I'm not entirely sure how we got here, except for the Lord taking us by the hand and other people cleaning our house and doing the laundry and taking out the trash, because when you're in grief, you can only focus on one thing. And that one thing happened to be our son. Our son, we saved our best efforts, and our best effort were not really looking like a best at that point, Xander, because we had very little to give, but we gave the best that we could to our son. And we still are doing that today, but things like a sink that's full of dishes, that's just like, oh my goodness, it's like my life. There's more than I can handle here. You know, so somebody just coming in and being like, you know what? I can handle this. You know, I have space. Yeah. One of our really good friends would send us text messages after JJ's diagnosis and be like, hey, have you drank any water today? Just a friendly reminder to change your underwear. You know, like, these mm-hmm. are things that you need to be reminded of, because they don't come naturally when you're in that deep of grief. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, it happened. Like, you're just, everything just becomes so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The smallest thing just sets a whole chain of mental health. And just, yeah. So speaking of that, and like having only the ability to focus on like your son in this case, how does that affect your Christian walk, if you're having to put all your energy, just like, and like you're saying, not even not enough in your energy, in your opinion, towards your son, how does that leave any room for you to like have a relationship with Jesus?
In our podcast, we set this up with even more detail than I can use now, but for each person, it's different. But I know that for me, to deny God's presence in that would have been like cutting off my nose to spite my face. God was so close to us during that time in so very many tangible ways that the best way I can describe it is just feeling like if I stepped back too quickly, I could feel the angel's wings, because we just felt like everywhere I went that Jesus went too. And we also describe that experience of our lives as not walking with Jesus because we couldn't walk. It's not a time where I'm like, let's get into Daniel 9 today. I've always wondered, you know, that kind of deep analytical thought is not even possible. Important, but not then. But the only way that we were able to sustain our relationship with Jesus is because he carried us and he held us tightly and closer to his heart than ever before. And I feel like during the worst moments of those grief, when it was absolutely the most fresh and the most raw, when those most painful moments were occurring, that's when we could feel Jesus' heartbeat and understand clearly that Jesus never wanted this to happen. I will say this as well. During that time of grief, for one solid year, I had to be very careful with the things that I would allow myself to listen to. I was in such a vulnerable, vulnerable emotional place that if I listened to anything that was sad, or, you know, or that just didn't really make sense, like sing a song about your girlfriend breaking up with you, like seriously talk to me about, you know, bigger problems. Now, the breaking up of a girlfriend is very painful. I will say that now, because that is the truth. But I just couldn't handle that at the time. And so one of the best things that I learned to do, another tool in my toolkit, was just to put in the earbuds that Jeremy had so lovingly bought for me and go for a walk around our driveway, just blaring Christian music about Jesus coming again. And there were different songs that I would identify with at different points in that experience that really carried me through. But I had to be really careful with what I listened to because I was so vulnerable in that time. And I was just clinging and searching and hoping and praying for just one little thread of hope. And you can count on Christian music to do that for you.
You know, when you ask, you know, what can you do, you know, to sustain your relationship with Jesus during this time when you don't feel like you even have enough to help your son? You know, I think we need to be okay with saying your relationship with Jesus during this time is going to look different and feel different than other times, and that is okay. You know, if you're big into playing sports and you break your leg, you're not going to be able to play basketball like you did before you broke your leg, right? It's going to look different. It needs time to heal. And so how you usually sustain a relationship with Jesus, what, through prayer, through Bible study, through community, through all these things. And those are important. But when you're grieving, to give yourself the permission, I just don't feel like doing that right now. And that's okay. And I believe Jesus understands that. And that's why it's so important to have community around you, because there are definitely times that I didn't feel like praying, but I had a community who prayed for me, who lifted me up when I didn't feel like I could pray. And so, you know, the importance of having community around you is big, I think, in sustaining that relationship with Jesus, understanding that it's going to look different, and that is okay. You may not feel like spending the time that you usually did before. That is okay. But providing space still for that connection, whether that's through music or maybe I'm just going to read a passage of scripture here, or take some time here to pray, to keep the communication open, to keep yourself in a space where the Lord can still be speak to you is obviously important, but it's going to look different, and that is okay. I think we need to give ourselves grace. And I think we hold ourselves to the standard that I don't think the Lord holds us to.
That reminds me of that big, ugly cry we had during a song service that our friends were leading. Yeah. And, you know, we're sitting there like just listening to the words. And it was a hard experience because we couldn't even get out the words until afterwards. But we're like, we believe everything you're saying, but we just can't say it. We need you. We literally need you to sing it to me, sing it over me, sing it for me, because yes, I do believe that Jesus is coming again, but I literally cannot get out those words right now. And so putting yourself in a position where you can hear that music and have people who know how to sing and what to do. Yeah, we could go on and on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. So I have a question that I want to ask. I kind of don't want to ask it, though.
It's <'Cause> okay.
I just feel like I know your answer, but I also just want to hear your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it's about the topic of, like, moving on. Mm-hmm. Is that something somebody should even consider? Or is that something, a goal that you guys even want to achieve? Or what does that even look like for you guys?
That is such a good question.
That's a good question.
It is a lot of work to carry on, someone's legacy for them. But the thing about love is that it lives on. And you often think, for example, when you have one child and then the second one's born, you're like, oh my goodness, how am I going to love this second child? Now I have to take and split what I had. But that's not true, because the magic is the love will double. And the love will not be split between the two children that you have. The love will double. And that is a beautiful truth that someone reminded me of just recently. So moving on, it's not necessarily that. It's more like moving forward. And one thing that people really struggle with as they get more than a year out, because the year of first is often the hardest for people. And then in the year of seconds, it's like, does anyone remember, you know, what's going on anymore? And then people tend to just feel farther and farther and farther away from that person. And that is true. You know, you are farther away from that event. But I have a super awesome app on my phone that actually helps me to keep track of the days out that we are from JJ's death. And so for today, for example, we are now 459 days away from her death, but we don't count it like that. Rather, we count it, we're 459 days closer to seeing JJ and Jesus again. And that is what gives me hope to go forward, not just to go on. I am going forward because I've got something to move forward to, if that makes sense. And that's given me a lot of courage. And that also makes it easier for me to watch that number get larger and larger. So when it hits 500, when it hits 1,000, it's like, hey, we are now 1,000 days closer to seeing Jesus and JJ. And that's awesome.
Yeah. I think something, Brooke, that you said that is important is that mindset shift. It's a mindset shift. You know, a lot of people feel that, you know, they should move on, or they feel guilty about being stuck, or let's say in the case of a death of a child, feeling guilty about having another child or whatnot. I think you never move on. Mm-hmm. The person is always going to be there. Just how you relate to the event is going to morph as you continue to move and grow. And as the event gets further and further away, it's going to change. And that's okay. That's part of life. That's part of living on a sinful planet is that's just part of it. And so, but you never should move on from the person. You're never going to. You know, if you love the person, you're never going to move on from that person. It's just going to change. And I think it's a lot, like Brooke was saying, it's a mindset shift. Instead of saying, oh, you know, we are 459 days away from the death, since it's, oh, we are 459 days closer to seeing JJ again. And I think for me, that mindset shift, I think, is key in helping change the perspective and help you deal with the reality that time continues to move, and the reality that our daughter's not here with us right now. Yeah.
We also have this beautiful reminder that JJ gave us as well. Just a few weeks before she died, we were reading a book in her room. I was reading to my son on the lower bunk, and it was a Christmas book, super sad, super depressing, just the way I like it. And someone died in the book, and I was just feeling very extra. So I said to my son, oh, Sammy, isn't that so sad? It's so sad when someone dies. And this was prior to JJ's death. And she, all of a sudden, I just heard this little voice from the top bunk, and she just said, but mommy, it's just the first death. And the first death is just not a big deal. And that really summarized not only her belief about death, but our Seventh-day Adventist belief about death. Grief is a big deal. But the first death is not a big deal, because we know that from the Bible that there is no pain, there is no suffering in death, and the first death has no influence on the second death or lack thereof. And it's just a temporary pause until life will resume. And so to have that story and to cherish that is something that's meant so much to us that we have put that on T-shirts. We also, when JJ's teacher gave her backpack to me one day, I was able to finally work up the courage and to go through it. And I discovered that her last memory verse was John 14, 1 through 3. And so the last little words we have in her handwriting, don't let your heart be troubled. And that spoke and continues to speak to us in every age, because it's like, my heart is troubled. It's very troubled. But it doesn't have to stay like that, because we do know that the Father is preparing a place for us. We will be there one day. And we are so excited about that. And that's the legacy that we hope moves on and continues to live on. And it will, because that's something that we want to do. Like I said, we've already made T-shirts. We're thinking about selling them at different places. And also maybe writing a couple books and just capture the bravery of our little girl, because that's a story we want to see spread. And there's been a golf tournament in JJ's honor, in which we were able to take in about $30,000 for worthy student education, where other children can come and learn more about Jesus. Again, very dangerous for you to bring two pastors onto a set here, Xander, because we could go on and on. But Adventist education, very important. And so while any day of the week, it doesn't matter what you could give me, it does not matter what you could do or say, I would still, if I could, I would choose to have my daughter back here. That would be number one priority. That's what I want. That's what I want. And one day I will have that again, because Jesus has the power to give her back, and he will. But because I can't have that right now, those things like a legacy that helps other people face death with courage. Like, we've heard so many stories of even elderly people being like, oh, that makes sense. Of course it does. It came from a 7-year-old, you know? Of other children being able to go to school, Adventist school, and learn about Jesus. Those things help heal. I feel like it's one little stitch into a completely broken heart. And those things cannot fix everything, just like money can't buy happiness. But it does certainly help, a little stitch.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, I think as people come up to us and say, you know, we've listened to your story, we've heard your podcast, or we hear what you're saying or whatever, and we're just so, we're so blessed by it, you know, you know, story after story of people who have listened to the story or heard it. And when we hear that, you know, I tell people this all the time. I say, you know, hearing that, first, thank you for sharing, but hearing that gives me enough space to be able to take another breath, to take one more step. You know, the grief is always going to be here. Mm-hmm. The pain is always going to be here. And so to hear that her death was not in vain, that obviously we know God didn't cause it, but that he's using it to bring glory to himself. He's using it to bring blessing to people, helps make the load a little bit easier to carry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fascinating how you're able to take such a dark moment in your life and like have so much positivity come out after on the other side of it. Like, you know, from like you said, you already have your podcast, you have plans to make even further, like, you know, books and writings and like all of these things. I wanted to see if you could talk about, like, you know, on your day to day, which is like, you know, pastoring children, pastoring youth, how you, because you already did that beforehand, before all of the experience, yeah, but you still could continue to choose to do that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like how that, what that means for you guys?
Well, it was hard to get back in for a minute there, because for me, one of the hardest things to do was to walk around the school, even though it was Madison Academy. Every time I go to Oaks, I'm always going to look for my daughter in the second grade. And even when we moved here to Madison, I would look for her in the crowd. So it was hard not to do that, but it was important for me to get back into that work, because I realized that I hope I teach kids a couple things. I hope they learn and that they benefit from my presence. But the truth, like, the joke is on me, because from that little story I just shared about my daughter, my life has been changed because of her. So now when I'm looking at a group of children and they're raising their hands, they want to answer the question, I'm like, probably better answer than I have. Like, I have something to learn from them. Also, I understand, Jeremy understands more now about how valuable children are. We knew they were valuable before, and we valued them. But now it's like, when we see parents that are too busy and they never see their kids, it's like heartbreaking, because it's like, God forbid your child passes away. I hope that does not happen to anyone else in our community or this planet ever. But here's the thing. You're not going to remember that you went to 65 soccer games. You will, however, remember the time that you went to Subway and put olives on your fingers. Like, those are the kinds of things that you will remember. It's the time that you spent together with your children. So has it shifted our ministry? Absolutely, because we realize it's odd to say that it takes the death of a child to truly understand what the life of a child, yeah, means. And that makes me feel very old just saying that.
Because you are.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. That was from like 85-year-old Brooke. But yes. But it is true that once you've experienced particularly the death of a child, you really do understand what their life really means. And that motivates me even more to encourage parents to spend the time with their children, to speak nicely to their children. Those things all really matter.
Yeah. You know, for me, I think yeah, ditto to what Brooke was saying.
You're old too.
No, not that part. Not that part. I am younger than you, so yes, I will continue to remind you until the day we die. But I think for me personally, you know, I deal with kind of the older crowd, the high schoolers, the college age students, and generally speaking, these are the times when they're starting to figure out faith, figure out if this is really for me, figure out they're starting naturally starting to split from their parents and wanting to figure out, is church for me? Is God for me? Is all this stuff? And so to be able to show up in that space and to at least share my experience in wrestling with those questions and share my experience with the death of my daughter and to share my experience of why I continue to serve God, even in the midst of something so horrible happening, I think it would be a waste if I didn't take this tragedy and at least share from my side, from my experience, in order to help someone else. I think, honestly, I've never asked. I don't ask for this. And of course, if you were to tell me, yo, Jeremy, would you rather have street cred and able to talk in this area, or would you rather have your daughter? Obviously, I would say I'd rather have my daughter. Mm-hmm. But because of the situation, it's almost like I've been given a platform where what I say hits differently than if a regular pastor said that. Like if I say, for example, if I talk about the Great Controversy and the Battle of the Great Controversy, I've been told that it hits differently coming from me because I've experienced the effects of the Great Controversy personally, versus someone who hasn't lost a child. And so I think that, again, I've never asked for this. I never want this. But reality is I've been given this, not ability, but this opportunity and the stage to be able to share that I think would help or is helpful to an age group that is naturally, because of the developmental process, questioning and wondering. And to be able to say, hey, yeah, I know, you know, you haven't lost a daughter, but life is hard, and I get that. I know that life is hard. And here's why I continue to move on and hope that in sharing that it helps them. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I appreciate you guys saying so much and like being so vulnerable today. I have one final question. I just want to hear your favorite memory of JJ. Really quickly, if you don't mind.
That is such a good question.
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, there's so many. One thing that I really enjoyed is that JJ was just like me. Yes. And look like daddy, act like mommy. That was really fun for me. And so at, I know. Oh, yes, this is good. Okay. So I was teaching a parenting class at Jeremy's church, McDonald Road Church in McDonald, Tennessee. And they had a lot of, we would just call them cartoons, but now they call them graphic novels in there. And JJ was an extremely proficient reader. And so she would read those. She started out because she wanted to find out what the graphic novels were saying, because it was always a conflict of sorts between, you know, a mother and a child or something like that. So she's reading through it. And she started out because of the novels, but then, like, she actually could read the information. So in my little teaching book, they have it as, like, a workbook. And you're supposed to answer the questions. And I was like, well, I'm not going to answer the questions because this is my teacher book. And JJ was a rule follower, and so she really wanted me to answer those questions. And so she would write in my answers. So I have her first, second grade handwriting there, putting the little answers in the book. But I told her one time, well, JJ, if you like this book so much, why don't you be the teacher? And she was dead serious, and she was like, well, yeah, I could do that for you. And her favorite chapter out of the entire book was called Alternatives to Punishment. And it was hilarious because we never had to punish JJ. A punishment was like a serious look. That could just like reduce her to tears. But Alternatives to Punishment, she just really related well to that one. And she did want to teach that class. And I had to tell her, she's like, but mom, I can be there. I can help you. And I'm like, Jay, you're seven. You know, you can't be in the parenting class yet. I realize you have some experience with your cat, your brother, but yes, you do have to be a little older. So.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
And she also did want to conduct a class on teaching kids how to make toast.
Yes.
She was pretty jazzed when she learned how to do that.
Yeah.
And so, but all joking aside, she really did teach us a lot of things, like, for example, to not be afraid of death. Mm-hmm. Death, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Grief, it is. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My favorite memory, or one of my favorite memories, is so I'm a huge football fan. And it was, I was at camp meeting, and I was talking to another pastor. His name is Josh, and he has a couple of daughters, and we were talking about football, and I was like, yeah, I want to get my kids into football and things like that with me. And he said, well, Jeremy, this is what I do. Every Sunday before the game, he takes them to their favorite restaurant. He gets them their favorite meal, and the rule is that you come back to the house and you eat your favorite meal and you watch football with dad. And he said, that for me was perfect. And my daughters love doing it. And so I was like, oh, great, perfect. That's exactly what I'm going to do. So the next season, that's exactly what I did. I said, hey, Sammy, JJ, they loved ice cream. So I said, we're going to go get ice cream on Sunday afternoon. The only stipulation is you sit and watch football with dad. And it worked. At least I thought it did. It did. But, you know, JJ, there was one time we were sitting watching the game, and she had a little tablet, and she was so proud of herself. And at the time, I was just shaking my head, but, you know, I was focusing on the game, and she's like, Dad, look what I did. And so I looked, and she had taken a screenshot or a picture of the TV with the football game on, and then she had written across it, football is boring. with a little football emoji on it. And I was like, what are you doing? And she laughed and laughed and laughed. She thought that was so funny. Of course, at the time, I was like, no, you said watch the game. But she thought that was funny. But, you know, honestly, I would never probably have converted her to a sports fan like I am, but I do know that she appreciated those times with me, and I do as well.
And she got a lot of free ice cream out of you.
And she got a lot of free ice cream out of me, which mom probably wasn't as thrilled about, but hey, that's okay. Yeah. Yeah,
that's great. That's a great story. Well, I appreciate you guys being here today, being very vulnerable and being willing to answer some tough questions, I think. And I appreciate everything you had to say. And I hope that somebody out there can hear this and be moved or feel held in a way. So thank you guys for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we're happy to share because we know that the same God that has carried us through this horrible experience is not only able but also willing to do the same. So for the listeners that you have, the trials look different and the troubles look different, but they are present.
Yeah.
And we can say with great confidence now, the Lord will carry you through.